You're listening to the November edition of Our Town. We'll continue our conversation now with Pastors Greg Wood, Ruth Miller, and Dale Edwards.
I definitely see that over the decades, probably starting as early as the 60s, where that started to change. You know, moms and dads both working, then divorce started becoming, you know, something in there. Whether people want to agree or not, the introduction of video games, the introduction of alternate worlds that you can sit in front of and create, you know, that takes you out of social. Even our phones today, where, you know, you will text somebody now before you'll call them and talk to them. Again, separating again from that interpersonal relationship right. that you have with them. And then to take it one step further, and I hope I'm not saying this offensively at all, but we have what I've seen is we have a religious culture and we have a spiritual culture. For example, in the Muslim culture, those that are spiritual tend to be more accepting, more loving, more caring. Those that are religious are by their book and to the extreme of that. So I think, what do you think about us losing our not our religion, but our spiritual connection to God? Greg, is that a can of worms?
I don't know. As a product of the 60s, I don't know.
me too.
I don't really know that we're any less spiritual than we've ever been. You know, some of the research that you read says that there were as many or more unwed mothers in 1810 as there are than there were in 2010. That you know, church attendance is not a very good, I don't think a very good denominator of things, because people came back from World War II and there was the idea that everyone needed to be a part of something. And so whether you believed or not, you were a part of a church. And some corporations even mandated that their executives be members of churches. I think that's part of the part of what we've seen in my generation and following. Was my Sunday school teachers really didn't know the Bible. They didn't have a spiritual connection, but they had to be there, and because it was the thing to do. So I don't know. I really don't know about that. What I think I have seen and experienced in my life, I don't think bullying is any worse today than it was when we were kids. I don't think being isolated and alone is any worse than it's ever been. I think that we have, as Ruth was talking about, found our own echo chambers, and I only get input that reinforces what I think or believe. You know, you talk to gang members. Why did they join a gang? Because it was a sense of community and fellowship. And then what does the gang become? It becomes their family. It becomes the center of their world. It becomes their information source. And so, of course, if someone disrespects your gang, you are going to go and take some retaliation. That's not very much different than the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was solidly white middle class, except that we would end it with a dirt clod fight. Now kids end it with guns or driving over each other with cars. You know, so there is some of that that's very much changed. The lethality scale is just gone off the books. You know, you look at the African American experience in America. We've lynched a lot of people over the years, and it may be that we are. We've lynched a lot of people over the years.
Reaping what we're sowing?
But I mean, I don't think any of this is new.
Yeah.
But we may be more connected to it. I grew up in a white neighborhood in the midst of a Mexican neighborhood and a black neighborhood. our whoever came before us set it up as a school system to avoid racial busing. They formed their own, you know, I didn't know this, and my parents may have known this. I don't want to tar them with that brush, but, you know, so I went elementary school, middle school, high school, all white, you know, and never thought anything about that. Today, it's very much more mixed, but, you know, I don't think any of this is new, except for the lethality of it.
You know, I can't help but think of Romeo and Juliet. Those were gangs fighting each other and killing each other.
Right. Yeah. West Side Story.
Right. Yeah. And we can go back all the way. The inner city has been a problem as long as there's been cities. You know, the urban density breeds gang work, you know, and breeds the kind of isolation that we're talking about here as well, because you you're aiming to be private somehow as you're surrounded by this density of people. I grew up in a mixed neighborhood. When I was in fifth grade, I was the only white kid in my class. And when I was a freshman, I was the only Christian in the class. You know, so very different. And I have Jewish family and Catholic family, and my grandmother worked in India with Gandhi. So a little bit of a spread here. And what I've seen is that there is an expansion into nothingness of sense of community and boundary and spirituality and normality and morality in the world, really, today, in the media-dominated world, in the corporate capitalist world. At the same time that individual communities are responding in different ways. Faith communities, neighborhood communities are beginning to say, in our community, it needs to be different. And we're going to do it differently. A lot of my work was in the inner city in Portland. And when I got there, it was still legal for a realtor not to show property to anyone of color outside of northeast Portland. And when I left there, they, you know, of course, were being encouraged to buy property all over the area. So things changed a lot in the 15 years I was working there. And what I got was, if we can wake up as a neighborhood, I use neighborhood watch, block parties, and those kinds of things to help wake people up to the neighbors, as Greg was suggesting, and to the similarities that override, Blake was saying, that Dale was saying about the God-centered nature of who we are, right? If we can, you know, get to that core and find who we really are and, you know, begin to recognize that the diversity is just a surface thing and it actually makes life more interesting. And this is what I saw happening in those communities. And actually, I'm seeing it in Florence. You know, I work up and down the Oregon coast. I have several congregations I work with. And Florence is the most inclusive, open-minded community I've worked with on the coast. It's delightful. And I think I think these people are making a difference.
But we're pretty monochrome. Yeah.
We are in color, but less and less so. I'm seeing more and more people of color all over the coast. But, you know, if we can start to open our doors to folks of other colors, we're already opening them to other cultures. Let's see if we can open our hearts to more.
You know, thinking back about origins, I was born and raised in Bend. That was back when it was about 11,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all white. There were virtually no ethnicity to speak of in Bend. I did not, you don't recognize it when you're growing up in it.
No.
This is who you are. That's where you are. You go back in the history of Bend, it was a rather racist community. My mom can remember stories of seeing crosses burnt on the Butte. As a result of that, Louis Armstrong was forbidden to come and play in Bend. Mm. It was a very racist community, yet growing up there, we didn't know that that's what it was. It wasn't until I went to college, and in college, in a collegiate atmosphere, you're immersed in diversity. And I loved that. I still don't understand the racial bias. I still can't understand how we can look down on anybody because of our race. It just doesn't work for me. But obviously it's there. I think that when we desensitize people to human value and worth, and haven't we done that culturally?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it, and I know these are controversial things, and but these are my opinions. When you can kill an infant in the womb, when euthanasia is expressed to be okay, what you're stating is that human life has limited value. This is my opinion. What does that say to the next generation? And then you bring in video games with the violence that's coming in. You look at the media and the violence and the sexual overtones that are allowed and now the normative in our culture. It wasn't there. And there was at least a sense of dignity, of human worth, of value. Today we don't have that. And kids play violent games and they have the idea that, you know, you shoot somebody on a video screen, that's cool. You go out and shoot somebody in the street, it doesn't have the same impact, obviously. But what we have done is we've desensitized people to the value of human life and human dignity and human worth. And when we do that, I think we end up, you end up reaping the whirlwind, and that's where we are today.
Well, it seems like a lot of us have become numb to what is actually happening out there. We've become disconnected to the rest of the world. We were talking about being young, being in communities. When I was young, I knew what was happening in my community, but I didn't know what was happening down the street, across the world, next state over. Now, with 24-hour news 7 days a week, you hear almost everything that's bad that's happening in the world.
Yeah.
And we didn't get that sense. We didn't get the sense that the world was on a downward spiral. We had the sense of what our community was. And in small communities, it always seemed to be pretty good. I mean, that was my experience.
And that's true for children in every environment. Whatever the environment is, it feels pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things that some people have complained about. Humanity will always adapt to whatever is as if it is pretty good. One of the things that I need to remind us is that in the 12th, 13th, 14th, into the 17th, 18th century, hanging in the public square was a form of entertainment. Burning at the stake was something people came to watch. So there is a shift, a significant shift. And actually, the statistics show that violence worldwide is decreasing significantly since the 40s. We have fewer wars going. We've got fewer violent events. The neighborhood I grew up in was Southside Chicago. Violence was normal. I remember looking out the window and seeing a man chasing another man with a gun and having a police cop walk the other side of the street so I'd get home safely, those kinds of things. But the connection, as you're suggesting, that 24-hour access makes it feel as if it's on the increase. It makes us feel as if we're part of it. Most of us had no idea about the lynchings and the violence that was going on in the South. We had no idea. It wasn't until the Martin Luther King and his people began to say, pay attention, this is what's happening here. And now we all know every time. You know, when the awful events happened in the synagogue, you know, that was not a kid. That was a man. That was a middle-aged man. Mm-hmm. And the awful guy, you know, who was sending those bombs, that was another middle-aged man. These are not kids who are being influenced by the video games. These are people who have been isolated and been being fed hate through a lot of ways over the years.
And again, that's something we heard, you see it in TV commercials, we heard it growing up, that racism is taught,
mm-hmm.
all right? It's not something that is generic in the human DNA,
nope.
Nor is the violence and nature of that. I mean, that's something that's come over time where we've just taught it to be okay.
That's right.
Like video games and things like that.
And it's really in the TV more than the video games. I mean, I get that almost every video game is about shooting something, but the TV, I don't have a television. So if I'm visiting someone or if I'm in a hotel room, I scan the channels. And the last time I was in a hotel room, half of the channels were for selling something. A third of the channels were violent shows. They were crime shows. They were, you know, those kinds of things. And then almost a third of the channels were sports, right? There was just one or two. There were a couple of Christian channels, which I just give great thanks for, and one or two, you know, stations that played old movies and Hallmark and that sort of thing. But by and large, the food, you know, both in the news and in the entertainment, is exactly as Dale was saying. It's, you know, it's full of violence and encouraging it. But that hate speech is the issue, I think, for the guys, the middle-aged men that are doing these things. I saw a statistic that said there were 155 terrorist acts, most of them shootings, in the past 12 months, and all of them were white men. Every single one of them.
Well,
wow.
And we don't get a lot of support for kindness, loving, and caring from the authorities all the way down.
Well done.
And I look at when we talk about educating kids, you know, and teaching them the right way, you know, if you train a child in the way he should go when he is old, he will not depart from those ways. In education, they say the way to learn is to listen, to write it down, and then to repeat it. That is what we're doing with the violent nature and the racial nature in our world. And nobody's saying this is what we're teaching because that's how we're doing it. We're showing it on television. They're playing it on the video games. And then they're going out and enacting it in real life. And
that's
what
scary.
Do we do?
That is
I know we're not going to get an answer here, but I mean, you know what?
You know, there's I've taken the course and I've taught the course of called epistemology. And it basically is a course that why do you believe what you believe and why? It's more than just an emotion. It's more than just this is what I believe, but why do I believe what I believe? We don't have a thinking class in our world today.
That's right.
We react to issues. We don't respond, we react. That's what's happening in our world today. There's this gut-rending reaction to every situation that's occurring. Why do we believe? Why do we act the way we do? I go back into my own spiritual journey. I was raised in a, quote, Christian home, a Christian environment. Simply meant that we believed in the Bible, we believed in Christ, we believed in the dynamics of what we would consider the Christian walk. Were we practicing it? Dust was on the Bible. I don't know that we went to church that much. We did because it was the cultural thing to do. But I remember when there came a turning point in my life where it was more than just a performance of going through some kind of litany to where there was a very real, dynamic, spiritual encounter with Christ for me. It was life-changing. It was an epiphany, if you will, in the fact that my life literally, it was a life-changing moment for me. And it's interesting because I think we have matured a bit even since that point in that what we embraced were those things that we were somewhat indoctrinated to believe. Mm-hmm. Again, it comes back to why do I believe what I believe? And I had to find out certain things in my own life, certain reasons of why I believed a certain way or why I didn't believe a certain way. Then comes the course of life, and you have the journey where you're involved in a variety of cultures with a diverse group of people. And it's easy as you go out of this country, we can tend to become a bit smug in going to certain cultures, and we are Americans, and we have only to sit down with a group of Africans to find out they're some of the most brilliant minds I've ever met in my life, and they've never set foot on American soil, but they are thinkers. They've thought through process. They've thought through why they believe what they believe. They're able to formulate a rational reasoning behind that. All of that to say this, how much of what we have today is an indoctrination of a culture? How much of it is a social construct based on a group's intent direction towards their own economic dynamic, their own political dynamic, their own influential dynamic, to try and change and bend the course of who we are. Have we thought through those processes? Have we thought through those reasonings? I'm not so certain that we have done that very well.
And I think we've actually given up thinking for the most part, and critical thinking, you might as well forget it. I mean, kids today don't even know what critical thinking is.
Most people don't know that criticism is not passing a judgment on someone else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
How do we talk to others about what has happened? What is our best foot forward when we talk about the violence against other religions, the violence against other people? Obviously, again, when someone is mentally ill, you know, you're talking to someone who may not be able to be adjusted or learn from that. But we also have groups of people that are within churches, within social organizations or whatever, that have taken on that whole culture of anger and hatred, and in some ways even perpetuated. How do we get that group that seemingly would be responding to critical thinking to come around?
Yeah, good question. One thing that I see, and please forgive me, I mean, you're going to ask a question and I'm going to give you whatever answer I'm going to give you, and it may connect to the question. But, I guess we have in the church and in our society and in our world sort of come down to dualistic thinking. If you're right, I can't also be right. If you're right, that means I'm wrong, or I'm right, so therefore you're wrong. And I think this plays into our racism, because white is right is sort of the dominant feature, and you look around and almost all of our presidents have been white, and all of the principals in the schools that we went to were white, and all of the professors that we had were white, and all of, you know, and to top that off even more, they've all been male. And so therefore the white male, as a white male, I can say this,
yes.
And especially as a middle-aged white male, I can say this, that we are correct, and therefore, Ruth, you are wrong.
I get it.
And so it's a zero-sum game. And if we really want to do something about this, we need to stop thinking in either or start encouraging people to say, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm right for me, but I'm not sure that I'm right for you. And in the church, we've really grabbed on to the scripture passage about Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. And we say, so unless you're going to claim Jesus Christ as your only way to the Father, then you are incorrect, and I obviously know more than you do, because I can quote that scripture, and therefore I'm right and you're wrong. And if you're wrong, I have a moral responsibility to keep you from infecting other people. And so therefore,
or
to make her right. But if she's not going to be right, if she's not going to see things my way, then I need to prevent her from infecting other people. And so it would be okay for me to do violence unto her, or unto her culture, or unto her whatever.
Right.
And that this dualistic thinking really pervades everything that we see. We see it in the political ads that we have right now. Oh, we see it in a lot of churches. This is what we do, and obviously we're right. And if you don't want to help us, then I'm sorry, we're not even going to talk to you. Ruth, you all are so wrong, you know, or we're so wrong, you know, and I don't want to, I'm truly trying not to live that way, but it is so pervasive. I win, you lose.
Yep.
Or you win and I lose. And it's all about me being on top. And part of that is human nature. Part of that is our fight or flight. Part of it is, you know, when we were all running around on the savannah and there's one gazelle, it made sense. But we live in such an interconnected world now. We've got to learn a different way.
Let me. I think I may be walking in your path now when I say this next thing, but you correct me if I'm wrong. My philosophy, I grew up in the Catholic Church. Then I went to Bob Jones University, which if any of you know anything about that, you know how critical we were of everybody. But then as I grew up and I put away childish things, I realized that, talking about the dualism thing, that everybody has a path on this planet. And if you are at a certain point in your path, I cherish and am blessed that you are on that path. It's not my path. Mm-hmm. But I know that you are right for where you are. And that's what I believe. You are right for where you are. So, but I don't think enough people, like you said, enough people don't go that way. It's either I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. And we can't have our own place and our own path on this planet.
There is a line of thinking that says that's a stage in human development. That we're born with kind of an oceanic, everything's okay, and then we're indoctrinated by the culture in various ways to certain things are right and certain things are wrong. And then if we're lucky, we have the experience that Dale described of going to university and discovering your diversity, you know, or that you describe of getting beyond the duality, and that, you know, Greg clearly grew up being, right? But, you know, if we're lucky, we get that experience of seeing that it isn't just one or the other. And, you know, there's some studies that say, you know, certain kinds of university training are designed to get us to that place of, you know, the technical term for what Greg said is committed relativism, you know, and what you were saying. You know, my path is good for me. I'm not going to impose it on you. I understand your path is your way. And, you know, when I was growing up, grandmother, as I said, had lived in India, had worked with Gandhi. She was a Methodist by training and so on. But she came back saying, my goodness, we're, you know, it's the same point at the top of the mountain. We're all just finding our own way up there, you know, and we're all going to end up there sooner or later through all of our different paths, which, of course, has informed everything I've done all of my life. So, you know, in the Unitarian tradition, that we are universalists in the sense that all paths are acceptable. And it's for that one, you know, point of union with the divine. And it may end up being that everyone finds a relationship with the being that Christians call Christ. I think it's true that there is a point where you get that, oh, there it is. That's what it is. But, you know, not every language has that word. And so it may not be called that in every language, right? And so, you know, we're all, as you have both said, we're on different paths, going the same place. And then if we can bless each other on the path we are on, that's marvelous. So to get back to your opening concern, you know, what do we do when someone is so off their own path that we can only call them insane? They can't, you know, they can't be on their path, much less anyone else's, if they're responding to things that way. And we don't have, especially since the 80s, when, you know, the system of mental health care was dissolved effectively pretty nationwide, we don't really have a way to help someone. And so I think, you know, the reason all three of us are called into the ministry is to be a way that people can find their path and be reinforced on it.
But we did have good mental health care, and we had lynchings and cross burnings and anti-Semitism, you know, almost from the beginning of America.
Yes, yes and no. We didn't have decent health care, mental health care, until the 1940s, really. So there was a 30-40 period where I think we did, and then only in the urban and suburban world, not in the rural world.
Right. Okay.
And it's in the rural world where most of that lynching stuff happened in the 1900s, is my understanding of how it worked. So, yeah, we need to honor that there has been a long tradition in humanity. I'm going to say about 6,000 years of empire building and mine, and then, you know, whatever I want is mine and I'm right and you're wrong. You know, if we go, as Dale was pointing out, if we go to other indigenous cultures and we see the wisdom and the caring and the thoughtfulness in those, you know, those people, you know, it may not be human nature. It may be indoctrination that causes us to have that duality, to cause that us to move into that place of there's only one way and I'm it and you're not okay if you're not it. That's what I'm working with anyway.
It's still pretty tribal.
To go back what you were talking about, I mean, you mentioned tribal there,
yeah.
Is it seems like the more we have, the less we know. And you see, you look at some, and I don't mean the more knowledge we have. I mean the more things that weigh us down, the more things that take us away from God, the more things that take us away from each other on a personal basis. And I think maybe in some ways that's kind of what has caused the more violence, the more things that are going on. As final thoughts, because we're about run out of time here. We are in a community that we will probably all say at some point, oh, it's not going to happen here. But we all know better than that. So what do we need to do in our community,
you know,
to support?
If I say it's freezing and I ask you, what temperature is that? Somebody would say 32 degrees. Somebody would say zero. They're both right. It's just what gauge are they using? I can only speak for myself in this room. I believe the Bible. I believe it fully. And I believe in the Bible, the Word of God gives to us the sense that all human life is incredibly valuable, is incredibly important. Jesus taught the value of the Samaritan, almost in deference towards the legalism of the Pharisee of the day. He taught the beauty of the Gentile world in contrast to the Judaic world. He brought out the value of human life. I think if we can get back to the centrality of that, if we could take everything about God that we believe that isn't true, and we were left with only those things that were true about him, how much sweeter this world would be.
Woo!
Yeah,
and if we could understand what that truly is, I think it would solve some problems. The challenge is this. We all have the ability to make a choice. I don't know of how many people have had bad upbringings that have made great choices and never used the poor experience of their excuse to be the reasoning for bad choices. Mm-hmm. I don't buy into the world that, well, I was raised this way or I was raised. No, you made a choice. And we have a choice. And when I read the word where it says that I am the way and the truth of the life, I believe that. I believe that his way is the right way. I believe it simply not because the Bible says it, but I believe it because I've experienced it. I know what it's done for me. And again, it's a personalized thing, but I believe that and I've seen it over and over and over again. Where we get in trouble is where we make exclusivity in the sense that if you don't buy into my cultural dynamic, something's wrong with you. I still believe the Bible. I believe there is a way. I think Jesus is that way. But the systems of which I believe in may not be the best for everyone. Does that make sense?
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, you know, and it's a lot of, you know, we can be in church and we can treat our brother or sister next to us really well. But when we walk out of the church and someone is standing on the corner there that doesn't have what we have and we walk past them, that is the true test of who we are.
That's right.
In life. Thank you all for being here today. I really appreciate it. Greg Wood, Ruth Miller, and Dale Edwards for joining us. I hope the listeners out there can glean something from this. Like I said, you know, we weren't born hating each other.
No.
So we don't have to continue doing it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Coming up in the next hour on the November edition of Our Town, we'll talk with the veterans as we get ready for Veterans Day celebration coming up this Sunday. Also, we'll hear from Chris Johnson and from Kathy Murphy with Light Up a Life. You're listening to the November edition of Our Town on Coast Radio.